Hi, I am Geneva D., and I am a very grateful member of Al-Anon and Alateen. Well, I sponsor Alateen, but anyway. When I got the letter giving me the topic of the meeting, humor and recovery, I thought that was kind of a joke. But what I found out later was that my oldest son, who is in AA, thought it was hysterical. So obviously, whatever I've learned about humor, I have forgotten to show them at home. So, and I have always found that practicing my program at home with my family has been the most difficult place to practice my program. But I think that a sense of humor is essential for good recovery. And I also think it's serious business, you know, and anything that's worth taking seriously is worth making fun of. So, but my favorite sponsor quote, the one that helped me the most, was, you know, if you learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never run out of material. She told me that, you know, at least 20 years ago, and it's been right so far. So, you know, when I first came to Al-Anon, my defining characteristic was anger. It had absolutely nothing to do with humor. I worked in a hospital, and when we would have new employees come in, and you know, there's always somebody wanting to ask something about someone, and they'd be trying to figure out who I was, or and they'd say, you know, the one that looks mad all the time. And the problem is sometimes, even today, I forget to tell my face that I'm happy. And that's the part that I really like to work on, because, you know, the really important thing, when I came to my first meeting, there was a woman there in that meeting that I knew from outside the program. And I hadn't seen her for about 6 months, but for 6 months she had been coming to Al-Anon. And while I had met her before, I had seen all of the hurt and all of the confusion in her eyes that I felt. And that night she had a smile on her face that included her eyes. And I know how important that smile is, and I try when I come to the meetings to remind my face that I am indeed happy today. Because I think it's very important to show that to the newcomers. And for me personally, that's extremely important because my face defaults to the anger look. Even though I'm not feeling angry, if I'm just relaxed and not paying attention to how I look angry. And I can still intimidate people. So I try to remember to tell my face to show that I'm happy. Also, when I came to Al-Anon, my humor was sarcasm. And we read in our literature all the time about where that word came from and about how it means to tear flesh. And the truth is that my humor always was meant for somebody to hurt, not me, but somebody was supposed to hurt. And when I first got here and began to realize what that meant, I thought I was going to have to give up humor, that I had no place in my life for that kind of humor. And I was taking everything awfully seriously, and that was when my sponsor spoke to me and said, you know, you really need to lighten up. You're taking all of this too seriously. And I tried to tell her, but I can't make jokes. I always hurt people when I do that. And that's when she told me that if I learned to laugh at myself, I'd never run out of material. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. At the time, I thought, you're so silly. But not only has she been right about not running out of material, I have found just in my, when I learn to laugh at myself, then other people don't have to pretend that I'm okay. when I can admit that I've made a mistake or done something silly and go ahead and laugh at myself, then we can all just know that I made a mistake and go on and do whatever we need to do differently. And that's a true gift. Not to have to pretend that I am perfect. Not to have to pretend that, of course I didn't make a mistake. You looked at it wrong. You know, being able to just say, okay, I'm goofy, and go from there and go ahead and do what needs to be done. Because sometimes what I've done is, you know, caused a problem, but if you go ahead and admit you've done it, you can fix it. And if you can laugh at it, then, you know, it's not nearly as difficult. But I also think that being able to laugh at ourselves is a mark of maturity. And there's a quote in our Courage to Change that's on page 205 if you want to look it up. It's down at the bottom. Ethel Barrymore said, "You grow up the day you have the first real laugh at yourself." And I think that that's really true. I think that being able to laugh at myself has been something that has given me the gift of just being an adult in an adult world. And I don't have to be going around pretending I'm an adult. I can actually be an adult. But the other thing that I think is so important about humor and that I have found in my life, when I can look at things with a little twist on it, maybe I find, I'm not sure if it's the opposite of paranoia, but it definitely mitigates paranoia. And I am paranoid. I just am. You know, you look at me wrong and what have you got up your sleeve? So if I can just take a stand back and take a look at my own silliness because of my attitude, you know, I don't have to be so worried about what you're thinking about me. Because, you know, if you're thinking about me, you're never thinking anything good. That's just, you know, some of us are sicker than others. But it also helps to relieve fear. You know, anything that you can laugh at just does not have that kind of power over you. I know this is outside literature, but if you read the Harry Potter books and read about the boggart, you know, how it would take the form of whatever you're most afraid of. And the way to get rid of that was to laugh at it. And I think that's true about any kind of fear that we have. When we can find something that we can laugh at about that, then it no longer has the power to run our lives and cause us to do those things that we do because we're afraid. We can step back and take a more rational view. So I was supposed to speak for 25 minutes. I've run out of material. Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot I was moderating. Oh, well. Thank you very much, Geneva. And now we're going to hear from Corey. Corey with C-O-R-R-I-E. Corey.
Thanks. Hi, my name is Corey Long. I'm a very grateful, enthusiastic member of Al-Anon. Hi. When I got the letter and asked to come and do this, I thought 25 minutes on humor. And I was at a meeting last week. And I was talking to two friends, one of who's sitting in the audience. And I said, I don't think I can talk for 25 minutes. And Ashley turned to me and she said, oh, we all know you can talk for 25 minutes. You've talked for much longer than that. And then my sponsee said, and, you know, when you talk for 25 minutes, it'll feel like an hour. I'm like, great, thank you. That's so kind of you. It's good to have friends. And I love that we're laughing. And I want to preface this with anything that I say today, I please do not take it that I am denigrating my husband, my sponsees, myself, or the program. There was no laughter in our house when we got here. And so the fact that we can actually laugh about stuff today, I believe that's the language of love for me. That's the language that God speaks to me, is in the language of laughter. And before he can get to my heart, he's got to crack it open, and he cracks it open with laughter. So feel free to laugh at me, with me, at him, with him. Just laugh with us. I know that if you're new, and I don't know if there's anybody new here, sometimes the laughter will run you out of the rooms of Al-Anon. That was not my experience. The laughter is what actually sucked me in, and I'm grateful for that. But it was the laughter in the AA meetings that sucked me in, not the laughter in the Al-Anon meetings, because initially there wasn't a lot of laughter in the Al-Anon meetings that I was at. And I don't know if that's because they weren't actually laughing or if I was not laughing. Not exactly sure which it was. But I want to tell you a little bit about how I got here. I got here on September 18th, 1998. If you're doing the math, that's almost 17 years. I got here on my two-month wedding anniversary. I had waited almost 36 years to meet and marry the perfect man. He was a raging alcoholic when I did it, but I didn't think there was anything wrong with me that his not drinking as much would not fix. And I didn't even want him to quit drinking. I just wanted him to drink less, which tells you how much I knew about alcoholism when I got here. If you're doing the math on that, in 2 weeks we will be married 17 years. Absolutely. My friend Jack. Thank you, Jack and Leslie, for getting up at 9:30 to get here. I will tell you, my home group meeting is the First Things First group in Montgomery, Alabama. We meet at 6:30 a.m. on Tuesday and Thursday meeting. My sponsor refers to that as the butt crack of dawn meeting. And we get up and we do recovery before we go to work, because it turns out we need a lot of recovery before we go to work. And it's amazing to me what the program Al-Anon has given me and what the program of AA has given my husband. And when I got here on September 18th, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I heard early on, I listened to a lot of speakers, I listened to a lot of CDs, I go to a lot of conferences, and I heard early on from a friend of mine in California that says, if you hear anything you can relate to in my story, feel free to steal it. Anything you laugh at today, I've probably stolen from somebody else, because that's how we relate to each other, is through our stories. We identify to each other in our brokenness. And I didn't realize that when I got here. And I think that's why, if you can laugh at some of the things that we can laugh at now, I believe that's a sign of healing. I believe that laughter is an indication that we are either healing from, or we have healed from, some of the most awful, horrible things that have happened to us. And I realized that early on. I mean, I got here on our two-month wedding anniversary. We checked my husband into treatment. I don't know what I thought treatment was. I had no idea they were actually going to keep him. It boggled the mind when we checked him in. But so you have an idea of what I was like when we checked him in. Married 2 months. They asked for his name. He gave his name. I gave his name. You are way quicker than I was. He gave his birthday. I gave his birthday. They said, how much do you drink a night? I said 8 beers a night, and he said 18 beers a night. And before I could whip around on him, the intake nurse looked at me and said, what are you, his mother? And I was insulted. I thought she suggested I looked old and bad. Turns out she was right. I looked both old and bad. But she sent me down to the family counselor, and she took one look at me, and she said, if you love him, you'll go to Al-Anon. And I thought, how dare you suggest I don't love him? I've just married him, for God's sakes. Fine, I'll go to Al-Anon. I had no idea what Al-Anon was. So I am not showing up someplace that appears that I don't know what I'm doing. So I went home and I got on the internet and got onto an online Al-Anon meeting. And if you've ever been in an online Al-Anon meeting with a brand newcomer, thank you so much for being willing to stick it out. Because I know I was interrupting that meeting 432 times. You know, what is this? What is this? What is this? And they all said, every single person at the meeting said, get to a meeting in person. And I now know why they said that. I thought they were being kind. So it really doesn't matter why you get here. And I swear, I've discovered that I have a disease that affects my hearing. And I thought that the intake nurse told me that if you want to see him at family counseling, you have to go to the Al-Anon meeting beforehand. So I went to the Al-Anon meeting with not really any idea what it was. But you see, Al-Anon's a hard place to get to, because it's really hard to ask for help when there's nothing wrong with you. And so I was going to Al-Anon to be supportive of him and to see him, because I didn't know they were keeping him. And went to that Al-Anon meeting, and this is what I heard them say at that Al-Anon meeting. It looked like that the three little old ladies there were 102 if they were a day. And they said, this is what I heard them say. Oh, honey, he'll drink again. They all drink again. But have hope. And I thought that was the stupidest thing. Yeah, that was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard in my life. And I burst into tears. I did not come in angry. I came in sad, pitiful, full of self-pity. Poor me. My poor life. It's so awful. But you see, I came in with this old idea in my head that, you know, once I've made a decision, by God, I'm sticking to it. People said to me, you know, well, are you going to leave him? No, I'm not leaving him. I've just gotten him. I am not leaving him. Never occurred to me that I could leave him. I mean, what would you think of me if I actually left him? 2 months and married? That does not look good to anybody. So it never occurred to me to leave him. But he came home 4 days in. So you know what I've got. I want you to know what you were dealing with. He came in 4 days into this recovery deal, and he said, I need to be rigorously honest with you. Not a conversation I enjoyed then, really not one I like having today. But I'm better at it today than I was then. And he said, you need to know I didn't graduate from college. That was really important to me. I dropped out to join the Army. There is not $25,000 in a bank account in Northern Virginia from an early out. I did not voluntarily leave the Army. I got kicked out for alcohol rehabilitation failure. This is not my first treatment center. It's my third, and one of them's a year long. Woohoo! Go team! Now, my husband is here, and I absolutely adore my husband. He is my best friend in the world. I love him. Oh, yes, and I wanted my husband to be tall. He is tall today. He is 5'5". But I'm... That's always important. For the guys that he works with, they want me to tell that I wanted a tall husband, and he's tall today. But he will tell you when he talks that he slept like a baby that night. I did not. Just FYI. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no idea because I can't possibly leave him. I don't know what this means. And then what I discovered later is he went to the treatment center and shared all that with them. And they sent him to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will be forever grateful to them that they sent him to Alcoholics Anonymous. But my husband came home from that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous 5 days in. And he said, I have to go to a meeting every day for a year. And I said, being the spiritual goddess that I was, well, what the heck am I going to do? And he said, I think you should go to Al-Anon. I think it's the same program. And I said, okay. And that began the six-month process of my husband sponsoring me in Al-Anon. If you are contemplating that, please use my experience. It did not end well. Let me just say that. And I didn't know there was anything wrong with me when I got here, but I started going to Al-Anon meetings, and I heard them say the answers are in the books. Well, great. I'm a smart girl. I have 4 years of college. I have 3 years of graduate school. I am incredibly well-educated, and alcoholism made me stupid. Because I had no idea about the disease of alcoholism. And we started going to open AA speaker meetings on Saturday night, and people were laughing at things that I thought were appalling that they were laughing at. I mean, how do you laugh at stuff like that? But they did, and his sponsor gave him this nice little sticker that he put on the mirror in our bathroom. Our bathroom was about the size of this podium. And this little sticker said, you were looking at the problem. And every morning and every night, I'd look at that thing and I'd say, God, that is so good for Kent. That is so good for Kent. And at about 6 months of being in meetings, not having a sponsor, but going to meetings, reading the literature, and listening, it suddenly occurred to me one morning, oh, my God, that's me. I am looking at my own problem. And that's where the process really started for me. But in the meantime, I did not know that seeds were being planted. There was not any laughter in our household when we got here. What I realized not so long ago is what we would do in our house is Kent would come home for work and he would sit on the couch and he would pass out on the couch. I thought he was simply napping. And then I would sit in the chair and I would watch Kent pass out on the couch because, you know, like he might do something. I don't know why I thought I needed to watch him. So we're not laughing, we're not talking, we're not doing a whole lot of anything. And then we get in this recovery thing, and he's gone, and I'm listening in meetings. I don't know that I'm actually learning anything. But one night we're home. I think we were probably between 60 and 90 days in the program. And I'd read the same thing about humor and it being sarcastic. And apparently I'm very quick-witted. I didn't realize that. I'm very quick-witted, and my sponsor tells me, use your power for good and not evil. And so I'm in the bed, and we're in this little bitty house. I'm in the bed. I've got the two dogs in the bed with me, and my husband has come home. Just, you know how they are 90 days. They are fired up, and he is fired up. He's been at this meeting from 7 in the evening. He's home at 10:30. It's like, whoa, and he's brushing his teeth, and he comes racing out of the bedroom, and I'm almost asleep in the bed. And he says, do you have a saying in Al-Anon, stick with the winners? And apparently I cracked one eye open and said, obviously not. And he had the same reaction you guys had. He started laughing. He said, well played, my friend, well played. And that's when the laughter started coming back into the house. And, you know, in a couple, it must have been, you know, 2 or 3 months later, I don't know exactly when, he was going at me about something, and I said, well, honey, that's what you taught me to say. Honey, I'm sorry you feel that way. And he said, that's just Al-Anon crap for I'm an idiot. Not exactly those words. And without missing a beat, I said, you could be right. And we had the exact same thing happen there, was we cracked up when we were able to start laughing about it. My sponsors tells me time and time and time again, we are dealing with a fatal disease. The family disease of alcoholism is a fatal disease. We need to take it seriously, but don't take it personally. And we needed to laugh. And as we started to laugh, it started cracking me open a little bit, and my heart started to open a little bit. And we were getting into it one time. I mean, and really, I started using the humor to not get invited to the fight. I mean, my sponsor would say, do not show up to every fight you get invited to. You do not have to show up to every fight you get invited to. And we were getting into it one day, and I said, I was like this, and then I stopped, incredibly self-righteously, I might add, stopped. And Kent said, what are you doing? I said, my sponsor, it's always a great way to start a sentence, my sponsor suggested I institute a 10-second delay button. And he looked at me without missing a beat, and he said, she's got a lot more time than you. You need a 30-minute delay button. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. But we were able to start laughing about stuff. And I remember the first time I went to speak, I was very, very nervous about speaking. And my husband could sense that I was nervous about speaking. And I said, I'm on the way in the car. And I said, oh, I don't think that I can say this. I don't think I can do this without mentioning your name. Can I break your anonymity? Trying to do it right. Because, you know, I'm an Al-Anon. We must follow the rules and regulations. And he said, yeah, I'm really not comfortable with you saying my name. What? He said, just call me SG. Well, his initials are KL. I'm like, SG, SG, SG. He said, you know, the spiritual giant that you live with. He said, and if you're not comfortable with that, you can call me Captain Recovery or the Grand Mookie Lama. And we have laughed about that and laughed about that and laughed about that. Now, I will tell you, we are laughing in this room, but I don't know if you've noticed this, but sometimes in Al-Anon, we take things very seriously, and we need to lighten up a little bit. And this is one of my husband's favorite stories. It's also one of mine. But it took me a little while to appreciate the humor in it. At his first home group, on your one-year anniversary, you speak. And I did not know that. And we were going to open AA speaker meetings on Saturday night. Date night was dinner and the speaker meeting. And this particular night, he got up to speak. And I was stunned. I didn't know he was going to speak. And part of his story that he shares, so I'm not violating the anonymity of the spiritual giant, was in an effort to become responsible, he decided it'd be a really good idea to marry a Panamanian prostitute. He shared that at his first home group. He shared that at an Al-Anon conference, and nobody laughed. Whom? And he stopped and said, man, you are not my people, because that's funny. They laugh at that in AA conferences. But the funnier line to me is, his first home group, we called it the home of the angry alcoholic, and there were women in that meeting that looked like they had had a rough life. And I'd been going every Saturday night for a year, and he said that he married a Panamanian prostitute, and all the women turned to look at me, and one of them said, she don't look Panamanian. Great. You know, but it's the laughter. It is the laughter that allows me to stay. And we can laugh about these things today. And I love that we lose the laughter in meetings. And people have asked me to sponsor them. They said, because you look like you're happy. You look like you're having fun. I said to Kent yesterday when we were walking around with the 432 bazillion people, and he was getting a little freaked out. I said, do not suck the joy out of this for me. Don't be a joy sucker. And he's like, okay, no joy sucking. We're going to have fun. And I'm just singing down the road. One of the things, when I got here, I didn't understand any of the slogans. You know, let go and let God. Let go and let God what? You know, that's what I'd say to my sponsor. Let go and let God what? And she said, let go and let God get him. Yes, I like that idea. We'll let God get him. You know, she used the humor to bring me into the program. You know, let go or get dragged. Okay, I like that idea. Let him get dragged, not me. You know, live and let live. That's dumb. She said, well, today you can just say, today I'm going to let him live. Okay, I like that too. I'm going to let him live. And what she's done for me is she's allowed me to look at things from a slightly different point of view and to not take things so seriously. And the women that I work with, when they call me, you know, in tears or really upset, chances are 9 times out of 10, I'm probably going to start laughing before I do anything else to break up the tension. If I can get you to just have a little space between the pain and what's really going on. Because you see, my thought process, my initial thought process is to go to the dark side, to go to the worst case scenario. What's the worst thing that can happen in this situation? And if we can interrupt that just a little bit and say, can we look at, is there anything remotely funny about this? And the answer is usually yes. I see Jack sitting over there, and I'm reminded of there was a point in our recovery where my husband decided it was very important for his amends process to voluntarily deploy to someplace. And he was looking for Afghanistan or Iraq, and I was looking for Alabama. And and he came to me one Wednesday night and said, "I don't think I'm going to get to go." And I'm like, "Go where, honey?" And he said, "I don't think I'm going to get deployed." And I said, "Oh, I'm so sad." And then I did the happy dance inside. Yay, he's not going. I just had to be willing. I didn't have to do anything. And the truth of the matter is, 3 days later, the next morning, actually, I called him, and 3 days later, he called me and asked, "I'm going to Djibouti." And I said, "Where?" He said, "Africa." And I said, "Really? For how long?" And he said, "A year." I'm like, "Wow, I'm at work. Let me call you back." Click, called my sponsor, and she gave me some very strong direction about it. And about 2.5 months later, we went to the international 3 weeks after that in San Antonio, and then a month after that, I put him on a plane and sent him to Djibouti. I had 10 days to do it. I'm so grateful for all the members of AA in our area who were, every time he said Djibouti, they laughed and they wiggled the butts and they made it really fun. He was going out to Africa and to the desert, and wasn't that great? And I was like, "Yay, that's great." And I thought I was going to be supportive, and I had to put him on a plane on a Tuesday, and on Thursday I had to be in Nashville, Tennessee, and I met Jack for the first time, and he knew that things were not quite exactly the way I would have liked them to be, and he spent the entire weekend with me laughing and carrying on. I vividly remember a pink tiara and a boa, and I'm not sure why he was wearing the pink tiara and the boa. But we left that first meeting, and Kent called me, and he said, "I've landed in Djibouti after 2 days." And he said, "I'm in a tent with 60 guys and no air conditioning." And I said, "Well, it sucks to be you today, because I'm in a junior suite with chocolate-covered strawberries." And you've given me opportunity. You've given me the ability to be able to say, you know, this is really not as serious as I think it is. If nobody's in the hospital, if nobody's dying, and even if somebody's in jail, is there something we... This will make a great story sometime. I promise you it will make a great story. But it is the laughter that has kept me coming back. It is the laughter that has allowed me to just breathe in this room, to say it's okay. The first conference I went to was at the beach. It was 2 months in. I did not think we should go. I thought we did not have enough money to go. We were already in debt. I had this idea that they were going to open debtor's prison for me, just me, nobody else. And I stood next to my husband when he called his first sponsor and said, because I wasn't sure he'd get it right, "You need to tell him we can't go." And he called. He got it right. He said, "Corey says we can't afford to go." And his sponsor, God love this man, said, "You said you were willing to go to Annie Lentz. It's $250. You're already in debt. $250 ain't going to break the bank. I'll see you there." Click. And hung up. And yeah, I thought it was rude, frankly. And Kent turned around to me and for the first time ever said, "I'm going with or without you." I said I was willing to go to Annie Lentz. "I'm going with or without you. More than welcome to come with me, but I'm going with or without you." Well, the first conference without a beach, I can possibly send them to the beach. There'd be alcoholic women at that beach, and I knew they were all wearing cutoff shorts and tank tops. Because, you know, information from nowhere, I just make crap up in my head, and I was sure. I like to describe it this way. Information from nowhere lands here, becomes fact for me, and then I act upon it. And I was sure that there were alcoholic women who were going to sit on my husband's lap and wiggle. We have yet to ever find that meeting, but I was sure that was going to happen, so I had to go down there and watch them. And the first AA speaker I remember hearing speak was Clancy, and the first Al-Anon member I remember hearing speaking was Mary Pearl. Yeah, the only way I can describe it to you was I was horrified. I was absolutely appalled. People were laughing like you guys are laughing, and I thought, I turned around to my husband, and I leaned over very quietly and said, "I will never do that. Ever." So this is what happens when you say that. And I walked out of that meeting, and the keeper looked at me, and he said, "Honey, you probably need to listen to her," and handed me another set of tapes. And I just couldn't believe people would be standing up talking about these most personal, intimate things, and people in rooms full of complete strangers that were laughing. I mean, how do you do that? But what I know today is the laughter is what brings me back. If I thought I had to sit at my house every day and just watch my husband sit on the couch for the next, you know, however many years, I think I just, you know, I'd have to go crazy. And I don't want to do that anymore. I want to have fun. I want to enjoy it. I want to look at things from a slightly different point of view, because God can use all of it. I have a relationship today with the God of my understanding, who I believe wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And I'm thrilled with the lanyard. Now, I will have to tell you, I did not get a lanyard yesterday that said happy, joyous, and free. So I was not happy, joyous, and free. But I've learned here to state my needs. So I went back and said, I really need one that says happy, joyous, and free. And she said, okay, and gave it to me. Because God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And one of the ways he does that is in the laughter. There are people here who've come to support me and who've laughed with me. Jason is here and said I needed to give him a shout out. So he's sitting over there just embarrassed that I've done it because, you know, when you say something to me, I'm going to probably follow through with it. But it's taken me a while to be okay and to be silly. And somebody mentioned about being goofy. I was so serious when I got here. One of the assignments my sponsor gave me was the year to embrace my gooberness. And I'm like, what? She said, embrace your gooberness. And I had a year where I had to write down everywhere I was gooby, everywhere I was goofy, everywhere I'd done something silly. And what it allowed me to do was it allowed to find me. It allowed me to find me. I picked my sponsor at a meeting where she hurt my feelings. She didn't know, well, I think she probably knew she hurt my feelings. But this is what happened. I was 6 months in. Kent was sponsoring me. I was going to meetings. I had no recovery. And because I had no recovery, Kent had decided that he wanted to run 3 times a week to get in shape. He's going 3 times a week, 2 miles a day. And I've got no recovery. I've got relief. I've got no recovery. And I'm helping him run. Have you ever done that? What that necessitates you to do is buying a Walmart bike for $79 and riding beside him as he runs. That was my idea. And so, because I'm married to an alcoholic, literally within 2 weeks, we're training for a marathon. Turns out my husband likes to chat when he exercises. I not so much. And so he's chatting. And what he's chatting is about what step are you on? What step are you on? What step are you on? Have you got a sponsor? Have you got a sponsor? Have you got a sponsor? And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to have to kill him. I didn't know Mary Pearl had planted a seed. But this woman had come to our meetings, and it was on a Wednesday night, and we're going around the room, and we got to me, and I said, it was on the 12th step, I said, well, I haven't worked any of the steps, but I'm carrying the message. And it got around to her, and she said, honey, you are not carrying the message. You are spreading the disease. Shut up. And I know today that she did not say shut up, but it's what I heard. I went home in tears, absolutely in tears. And Kent, I know, was terrified. He said, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because he thought I was going to quit Al-Anon. And out of my mouth came, I'm going to ask you to be my sponsor. I don't know where that came from. But I know today why it came out of my mouth. It's because I knew what she was living with. And I knew that she could come to meetings. And I knew that she could share about being happy. I knew that she could share about laughing. She wasn't taking everything serious. It was not what Cliff Roach calls the gray tunnel meetings, where we sit in the meeting, life sucks. It wasn't that. She was laughing about that. And I wanted that because I knew I was taking things way too seriously. And she's taken me through the steps. That one's my sponsor for over 16 years now. And I called to tell her I was on this panel, and she said, well, of course you are, honey. You're a funny girl. I'm like, really? I'm funny? I don't even think I am. But she's taken me through the work, and she's allowed me to see things from the positive point of view. She's allowed me to laugh at myself. She's allowed me to... we say in our household that we like to laugh a lot. We prefer, when I'm talking, I say I prefer if we laugh at Kent. When he's talking, he says I prefer if we laugh at Corey. But we laugh a lot, and we have a really, really good time together. And we were talking about me doing this earlier, and he said, well, you got to share, and this will be the last story I share. You got to share about the dogs. Because, you see, I came in not thinking I liked dogs. I had no idea that I liked dogs. I don't know that I was afraid of dogs. I just thought dogs might be a lot of work. And we were not in the program when my father died. And we came back. Kent came back from the funeral a couple of days before I did, and we'd been burglarized during the funeral. And he said, we need a burglar alarm. And I said, okay, do whatever you think's best, honey. Now, remember, he was drinking at the time. Bad idea. And what ended up happening is we ended up with a 196-pound dog. That was our burglar alarm, which turned out to be a really good burglar alarm. But so we had this ginormous dog. His name was Ranger. And I knew nothing about dogs, but I was willing to learn. And we went out one day to the local park. And I'm pretending like I know what I'm doing because I'm really good at looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. I have no clue, but I'm not going to ask. So I'm walking this dog, and the dog goes for a duck in the lake. He's 196 pounds. I am not. So apparently we were all going for the duck in the pond. And he drug me right into that lake. And my initial inclination was to yell at the dog until I turned around and my husband's on the ground. He is laughing so hard, he can't help himself. He said, "That's the funniest thing I've ever seen you do," was go flying into lake. And we were able to laugh at it. I didn't have to take it seriously. I was able to laugh at it. I was soaking wet. It was just ridiculous. We come home. It's not more than 2 or 3 days later, I'm sure. We're in the bed. We have a double bed. I have a 196-pound dog. I have my husband, and we have a 75-pound Labrador in the bed with us and me. Middle of the night, my husband hears this thunk, because what's happened is the 196-pound dog has done this and shoved me right out of the bed onto the ground, right? And Kent comes around, and God bless him, he's trying so hard to be kind and generous. Are you okay? And I can see it. His head's fixing to explode. And I turned around to him and said, "It's okay to laugh at this." And he did, and he laughed at it. And we've been laughing ever since. We have a dog right now. His name is McDougal. McDougal, Hamish, Honcho, and Longley, Scottish Thistlehound, and Wonder Pup. And we call him Doogie. And that dog allows us to laugh on a regular basis. And anywhere I can find humor, when I talk to the men and the women that I sponsor, and we can laugh about something, it takes a little bit of the sting out of it. If we can find some humor in some of the stuff that's happened, the fact that we can laugh about all these bad, awful, horrible things just shows me that there is a God who really does want us to be happy, joyous, and free. But I don't think I can do it by myself. I think we have to do it together, and that's why I love panels like this and people who are willing to show up and who are willing to laugh with me and to laugh at me so that I do not take myself so darn seriously. Thanks very much for my life, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Coryell. Another, thank you very much. And our final speaker is Veronica P.
Hello, I'm Veronica. Grateful. Oh, my reader. Yeah. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon, Al-Ateen family groups. I wasn't grateful when I first got here, but I wanted to read from Living Today in Al-Ateen, July 5th. Recently, I was asked to share at a potluck. My grandmother died about a month before, so I knew I was going to have a hard time keeping it together. I was scared to death to be in front of all those people all looking at me and waiting for me to say something. As if I wasn't nervous enough, the microphone kept going off, the person next to me started laughing, and finally I started laughing too. Being able to laugh broke the fear a little and allowed me to calm down. Sharing that night made me feel stronger inside. My group sponsor was very good at helping me get through it. I was able to share whatever was in my heart and know that I was doing what I was supposed to do. Afterward, I felt much better. Facing the fear and doing it anyway makes me feel better about myself. Things to think about. As I stick with Al-Ateen, I learn to laugh at myself. Today, I'll find something to laugh about and try to take life a little less seriously. And that's from Al-Ateen, A Day at a Time, page 185. So I am an Al-Ateen sponsor, and I learned so much from the Al-Ateens and how they express joy and freedom and life. And, you know, these kids, they're either, like, living with active alcoholism or, you know, maybe have like, a dry, like a sober person, but the person isn't in recovery, or they're just dealing with the day-to-day stuff of just being a teenager. And, you know, these are the same kids that are able to, you know, say stuff like this. I got to work, I had a chance to sponsor an Al-Ateen meeting, where this particular Al-Ateen meeting, it's a good mix. Like, sometimes they'll have a 9-year-old and teenagers, and the room is set up where the teenagers can, you know, they could split the room in half, and one side is the teenagers, and the other room I got to work with the one, a nine-year-old, there's a divider, so I was able to see the other room, and the sponsor was able to see in our room, too. We could make, like, keep it safe that way. So I'm working with this nine-year-old girl, and, you know, doing step work with a nine-year-old, we played games. And so we played hangman, and I had to guess the word, and the first letter I was S, and I'm thinking like the word has to be serious. So I'm thinking like suicide or stress or something like that. I was like, those are my words. And, but the word, because she gave me a hint, she's like, it has to do with Alateen. I'm like, okay, so like suicide, stress, you know. And the word ended up being snacks. She's like, snacks. I'm like, oh my God. Another game that we played that night was a memory game where, you guys played memory. Okay. So, it was matching the steps. So she got to match the step. I forgot which. She matched step three. And if you have a match, you have to say what that step means to you. And it was about higher power, you know, turning it over to a higher power. And so this little girl, she's like, higher power means to me. Higher God is big and beautiful. I'm like, what? So it's like, you know, with working with the kids, they're able to, in their little minds, you know, they're developing, but they're able to describe their world in simple sentences where, you know, I, as Al-Anonic as I am, it's like, you know, you got to figure it out. And, you know, growing up in my household, you had to be like 20 steps ahead of the alcoholic. And if you took a break, you were dead. And, and it's funny. I'm able to find the funny now. 10 years into this, I'm able to find the funny. I you know, the ridiculousness in the disease, and also the ridiculousness in my recovery. You know, sometimes I'll be in a meeting, and I'm not the typical Al-Anon like member. I'm not 50. I'm not Caucasian. I'm not a woman. And you know, our membership survey that's been going on since the 80s. That's the typical statistic. And I was like, why is that? What is it about our disease that makes us so old and rotting from the inside? And where are all the young people? And I came into the program when I was 26, and sometimes I'll be in the meeting, and it's generally they're mostly married, mostly wives, and I'm not sure if they're talking about their husband or their dog. Because they say things like, well, he just won't behave. He shits all over the house. Just won't behave. I'm going to read this little... You gotta, like, when you do stand up in front of, like, an Al-Anonic audience, you have to, like, preface them first, like, explain the joke, and it's like, they don't wanna... You explain the joke first, then you tell it, then you explain again. And then... So... I love stand-up comedy. I didn't have Alateen. I didn't have Alateen growing up, but I'll just say it. It's just, and it's like, I know this is going to be recorded. Should I censor myself? I'm like, fuck it. This is like, I'm like a firm believer in raw expression, and I didn't have, it wasn't safe in my house to express raw feelings, because if you expressed uncensored raw feelings, you were either like, you know, put down, or you were told that's not how you feel. And you know, the print, you know, one of our spiritual principles is like, this too shall pass. Like every time I had a feeling, it felt so real. Like I didn't know it was going to pass. And, so, And as crazy as my alcoholic home was, it was a highly functioning alcoholic home. And if you grew up in the type of that's the type of alcoholism where, you know, both of my parents were alcoholic, and as alcoholic as they were, these were the same people that put three kids through college, had a business, they were supportive in some way, but at the same time, they were so crazy, like, there was domestic violence going on, and it was I grew up in a household where, you know, what I know now is, like, violence is violence, and pushing and shoving. There was always that. Like, my dad never put bruises on her until, you know, his drinking and drug use got really bad, where, you know, he did put bruises on you, and it was like the sometimes domestic violence. Like, if it was sometimes, it made it okay. And then the next day, everything would be fine. It's like, what happened just yesterday? Like, and it was so confusing. And, you know, it's taken me 10 years to really find the funny. And I do, like, recovery stand-up. I started doing that 2 years ago at various Al-Anon events. And I actually got a phone call from our area chairman to inform me that I went too far and I'm pissing off Al-Anon members. And, well, here's the thing. Like, when the area chairman calls you up to let you know that you were being offended over something that you said 2 years ago, you know you're doing something right. Thank you. And so I love this quote because it totally describes my recovery. And I just found it on my Facebook feed, and I'm like, I'm so keeping this. So it says, "For a seed to achieve its greatest expression, it must come completely undone. The shell cracks, its insides come out, and everything changes. To someone who doesn't understand growth, it would look like complete destruction." Yeah, some of you could relate to that. I'm always changing. I'm always changing. I'm always transforming. And my joke telling is my expression. And I don't get paid to do, like, stand up at these Al-Anon events. You know, that is a goal. I know those people that do recovery comedy, but there's no comedians, you know, representing the friends and family, which I get, because, like, you know, nothing's funny and it's all your fault. And I have a lot of friends in the entertainment world where they are in recovery, and those are my peeps. And it's like, you know, and it's so easy for me to, you know, feel still in a room, in this room, feel so alone, because, you know, it's like, it's hard to find people who also do stand up. Like, I'll come across someone who, like, oh yeah, I used to do stand up, like, back in the 80s, but I don't do that anymore. And it's like, oh, that's so Al-Anonic of you to say. I did have an Al-Anon friend who was a stand-up comic, and she passed away a year ago from ALS, and she was a member of this fellowship. And it's nice to have, like, a fellow peer who's also a stand-up and an Al-Anon and in recovery. And I know I have people in my life who are funny, but it's like, you know, in this fellowship, you find your peeps. It's sometimes within my own recovery, like, I don't have the experience of being married, like, that married dynamic. And, you know, my mom is still married to... No, and she's not married. They're divorced, but they're still together. It's like they never even dated. Like, after they divorced, they didn't even, like, date other people. They just went right back to each other. Maybe they took a look at the dating world, like, oh, fuck this. We'll just I don't know. I joke with my mom about that, and I told my mom, like, Mom, I think the divorce saved your marriage. Thank you for clapping, because it's like, you know, I grew up in this fellowship, and it's like I'm learning to, like, this is like what works for you may not work for me, and who says you have to get married or something? It's what's working for with them. Like, whatever your relationship dynamic is, if you're just living together or whatnot, if that's working for you, like, great. And sometimes I get frustrated with my own fellowship. Like, I reside in San Francisco. I started my recovery in San Jose, which is only an hour south from San Francisco, and it's like sometimes it's like feels like it's two separate Al-Anons. You know, in San Jose, it's I felt I got they stuck to the traditions, the steps and concepts, and in San Francisco, it's hard to it's hard to organize a potluck because everyone's like, oh, I can't go to the potluck. The spaghetti isn't gluten free. Some meetings read the so-called Al-Anon promises. Have you heard the Al-Anon promises? And there is no Al-Anon promises. And speaking, that's what's hard for me. Like, speaking up, and it's like, what's that balance between speaking your truth and versus telling them what to do? And I'll just speak my truth, and it's like, you know, we're not here to promise. We're here to offer help and hope, and you just feel like you just stole their firstborn child. What do you mean there's no promises? Gender neutral steps, come on, please, whatever. I was at an area assembly, and this topic always comes up where, I'm in Northern California, and so the big cities that complain about gender neutral steps is Berkeley, San Francisco, Santa Cruz. I'm like, it's the hell mouth of codependency, like those three cities. And the loudest voice of gender neutral steps. And what this program taught me is like, everyone has a voice. Everyone has a voice, whether you agree with me or disagree with me. Concept five and four, or the minority of the minority opinion shall be heard, gives the platform a safe place to express our voice. And this is just an example. Personally, for me, I don't see gender neutral steps as a way to recovery, and some people do, and that's great. But this platform of Al-Anon service and how it structures gives us a safe platform to express those opinions. And the funny in that is, it's so great. It's because it's, you know, growing up in an alcoholic home, there was no such thing as the minority opinion shall be heard. There was no such thing as going up to the mic and having your 2-minute share. You know, at our area assembly, we have some Alateen group reps. You know, 12-year-olds at our assembly, or 15-year-old group rep at our assembly. And, you know, you go to the Al-Anon side, and they're like, well, I don't know. A 3-year term? It's 3 years. You put in 50 years in your marriage, you could do 3 years. We have a 12-year-old group rep. There's no excuse. My favorite, this old timer at this one, at our last area assembly, we had elections, and a person had a question about like the time, how much time do you need to put into doing area service? And this one, a long timer, lots of recovery. She goes up to the mic and she says, well, how far did you drive for the alcoholic? And you get reimbursed for your expenses. Did you get reimbursed when you were driving around the alcoholic around? No. It's fun. So humor and recovery, it's if you ever get a chance, like, go, like, one of my, like, I'm starting to read our CAL literature, conference-approved literature, from cover to cover, and I recently finished Lois Remembers, and after reading that, it's kind of more like Lois Selectively Remembers. That should have been the title, Lois Selectively Remembers, because she starts off one thing, and then it jumps into another. I'm like, hey, what happened between those years? And I think, and then it's like, you know, as it, I could totally relate to that, because it's that's what we do. We selectively remember. We just remember like the bad part and not the good part, because if we remember the good part, it will not make us right anymore. Isn't that right? Because I could totally, like, you know, my dad, he's the first man in my life where, you know, where a daughter has, this is her exposure of, to the, like, the male side of things. And I could totally focus on the negative and how he beat up my mom and how he raged. And that was my example. And guess what type of guys I dated? The sometimes nice guy. You know, if Al-Anon had a dating reality show, it'd be called The Potential. I would so watch that show. The Potential. It's like The Bachelorette, except worse. Like, the confessionals would be like, you know, Nick, he drinks a lot, and he's a really nice guy once you get to know him. He stole my wallet last night, but it's okay. He was just having a bad day. People-pleasing. So it's like, humor is such an important topic. It's part of my core program, and I love to laugh. I remember being a little girl, and, you know, my parents, what I remember, or the experience, like, my parents would be screaming at each other. And I remember, like, watching TV. I must have been eight, nine, like, around, and I see this man on TV, and he's like all boisterous, and I have no idea what he's saying, but I heard like laughter, and it turned, the man that I was watching was Sam Kennison. And I was like, you know, he's screaming and yelling, and he's like, I guess he's saying bad words, but I'm eight. I don't understand what a vagina was. And he's talking, like, now that I'm 36, I'm watching, Kennison, like, clips on YouTube, and I get it now. Like, his jokes make sense when you're 36. But, when you're eight and you're watching Sam Kennison, like, all you see is a big man, like expressing himself. And I was like, I want to do what the man does. And some, like, you know, I could kind of, I guess I could understand, like, why some people get a, you know, in the Al-Anon community, why people get so uptight, and, you know, phone calls from area chairman or trusted servants telling me that I went too far. But, you know, none of that matters to me. What matters to me, and I need to focus on this because this was bothering me a lot, and I'll just wrap up with this. It's like, to focus on the positive, because when that whole experience happened, I wasn't focusing on the positive. All I was focusing on taking it personally, and I did something bad. And so, this is my side of my disease, where I took on that phone call when the area chairman called me up to, like, to say what she needed to say, and that was a 2.5-hour conversation. And I'm mad at myself. I was mad at myself because I stayed. Isn't that what we do in Al-Anon? We stay. One of my favorite phrases is, you know, you're not an Al-Anon because they hit you. You're an Al-Anon because you stayed. I'm like, oh, that hit home for me. How much time do I have? Really? Okay. Yeah. I'll wrap up. And so I took that phone call seriously, you know, like, and that's like going back and how, you know, what doing stand up has taught me a couple of things. One, what you think of me is none of my business. Two, I could hang up on you. I mean, just because she's the area chairman doesn't mean I have to listen. And I have wasted my rollover minutes on that conversation. Damn it. And I think back, you know, sometimes it takes me a while. It takes me a while to process the anger. This is like a year into it. And so what now, I'm like taking steps to take back my power by doing impressions of her. Dude, if you're going to call up a comedian and tell them that you went too far, I'm like, of course it's going to go in the act. Come on. So I do impressions of her, and it's funny, and I like it. And appropriately, because, you know, this panel talked a lot about sarcasm, and as a person who does stand-up, it's sarcasm is sometimes... In my experience, it's okay, because I'm just speaking from my personal experience. There's a time and a place. So when I am on stage, to me, sarcasm is okay, and I do have my own personal moral compass to change names because I do talk about people in my life. So to protect them, I change their name. You know, half the time I'm up here, it's like 95% of what I say is probably not even true. There's some of it's true, some of it's not. But that's not the point. Like, my primary purpose on this stage is to entertain. And all those jokes that I told at these Al-Anon events in my district, people laughed. People laughed. People had a good time. Teenagers, Alateens coming up to me and saying, like, thank you for making me laugh. I was having a shitty day, and you helped me forget for that little time. I don't feel like cutting myself because you made me laugh. You know, those are the compliments that I need to hang on to and appreciate. And you know what? If people are offended by what I say, what I've come to understand is, just like shares, because there's Al-Anon shares that hit me to the core, that break me up, that forces me, not just forces me, it's like, you know, I have some, like, suppressed memories, and if I wasn't doing Alateen service, those teenage memories would have never surfaced. And so if my jokes are, you know, stirring up some memories that you swore to yourself that you would never feel, and instead of being angry and upset and calling me and telling me that you're offended, why don't you do some step work about it? You know, call your sponsor. You know, if you're offended, good. It tells me you're paying attention. And I understand this is a fucked up disease. You know, it is. Mental illness, institutions, school shootings. You know, say what you want about what happened in Charleston, about Dylann Roof. But you know what? I saw those pictures. I saw the eyes of our Alateens, Alateen newcomers. Our Alateen newcomers look exactly like that. I know that look. You know, Stony Brook, they showed the face of that mother. That's that Al-Anonic look, that Al-Anonic mom. It's like this disease just kills and destroys as much as alcoholism, but it's subtle. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. I could have easily been, you know, one of those Columbine kids. Easily. But I, you know, for the grace of God, my spirit told me to go into stand-up. I'd rather do stand-up than shoot up a school. So I just say for the people who have been offended over my comedy, I'm not making apologies for it. And I hope you find the humor and the funny, because it's there and it's out there. And I will totally help you find the funny. We'll write jokes, because writing jokes takes my power back. And I love it. And I love you too. Thanks.
Thank you, Veronica, and thank you to all our speakers, Geneva, Corey, and Veronica. And we have some more time, so I'm going to talk a little bit, and I want to give a shout-out to my home group. It's the Sunset Beach meeting in Sunset Beach, California, 10 a.m. Sunday. Irv is there from our meeting. I've got one supporter. Thank you, Irv, for coming. Yeah, it's a great meeting. We meet actually on the beach, and we don't have to worry about rain because it's California, and we have no rain anymore, no water. We just see the big beach there, and we can't drink it, but, you know, it's there. when I got to Al-Anon, I just did what you guys told me to do. And I mentioned before when I opened that that humor and anger were a big part of my – those are the only – emotions in my family of origin, and it was a big part of my recovery to listen to humor and Al-Anon. And so I just did what I was told, and my sponsor is kind of serious, so she was a great straight person for me. She's just like very serious all the time, she just cracks me up. She has the serious face. You have the angry face, she has the serious face. You know, this is my serious face. But when I got to Al-Anon, I did what I was told, and my first year in Al-Anon, I was an Alateen sponsor, co-sponsored the young Alateens. It's a great commitment. And they're so sweet and unbelievably spiritual. And I wanted to give back to Al-Anon, and I wanted to make cookies, and I had to make them from scratch. And sorry, Irv, you've heard this story a million times. So I was making cookies, and my older son was doing community service, and I had made a dozen cookies, and he called and wanted me to pick him up. And so here I am, I've only been in Al-Anon, 6 months? And I thought, I wanted to make at least 3 dozen cookies from scratch for my Al-Anon meeting, and I started to get upset. And my younger son looks at the refrigerator, and somebody gave me a magnet, let go and let God. And he said, well, Mom, just let go and let God. And I know it's sweet. I'm a crier. I just thought I'd give you some tears here for that. Anyways, I'm also a very grateful member. And so I left to pick up my older son. I put the cookies down on the kitchen cabinet. They were all cooling on paper towels. And so I thought, okay, I will let go and let God. I will make a dozen cookies, and, I have a dozen more to go, and that'll be it. I'll go to my meeting tomorrow night, and everything will be fine. And when I got back, I looked in the kitchen. All the cookies were gone. And I thought, oh, my God, this is a creepy but awesome program, And I thought, well, this is not right. I'm a sane person. I know the cookies haven't disappeared. And sure enough, the dog had eaten all of them. And luckily, they weren't chocolate, because I understand it's bad for dogs. And they were just sugar cookies. And so when I got to my Alateen meeting the next night, I told the story to the kids, and this one little girl said, you let go and let dog. So just if you're new to this meeting, just doing those small things. Like, I didn't believe in anything. I didn't believe in that saying. But, my higher power made it unusual for me to think again about, maybe there is something to this program. And those have been my spiritual awakenings since I've been in this program. And, on my flight over, I did great research on whether to take the aisle seat or the window seat. And, I talked to everybody. And I finally decided that I would get the aisle seat. And so I was checking in LAX, and the guy looks at me, and he said, it's Wednesday, and it's 12. Your ticket says 12 p.m., and this is a 12:30 flight, a.m. And, And so he sent me over to special services. I thought, oh, fine. I'm not going to be able to get there. And there was a girl next to me, a soul sister who was just cracking up. She said, you don't know the difference between AM and PM. And I said, I do know the difference between AM and PM. But to me, 12 PM is late. And, you know, it's just, it doesn't, anyway. So I got on standby and I said, well, God, you know, and this is the first time I've ever been on standby. And I was talking to all the people going to Georgia and they're so polite and so nice. And yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. And I thought, my gosh, they're so sweet. You know, and I'm going to take that back to LA. I mean, we're nice in LA, but there's no yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, you know, and, you know, except for my boss. Sometimes I'll say that when I'm in trouble. But, so I ended up getting a seat finally, and it was in the middle. So, you know, all that anxiety and forward thinking was for nothing. Anyway, I enjoyed the flight over, even though I slept through it. But yeah, so this program is awesome. And if you're ever at 19th and Pacific Coast Highway in Sunset Beach, please come and join our meeting at 10 a.m. on Sunday. It's an awesome meeting. We may not have literature because it would blow away, but we do have newcomer packs, and we have a lot of, you know, we do keep with the traditions. We have a lot of recovery there. And so I don't know if I, let's see, we have 15 minutes. I don't know if I can talk for 15 minutes. We can close? Okay. Okay, we took a group conscience, and we're just going to close. So let's close with the Al-Anon Declaration. And let me thank the speakers again. Geneva, Corey, and Veronica, they were awesome. Thank you.